iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the highlights every month on Coast to Coast is when Earth Files investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us to share her reports on high strangeness happening all over the planet. Linda explores cases of remarkable Earth changes, baffling scientific mysteries, and incredible stories from witnesses who are revealing their paranormal experiences for the very first time. Become a Coast Insider, and you can hear Linda's monthly Earth File reports and dig into the Coast to Coast archive to check out her many previous appearances on the program. So head on over to coasttocoastam.com and sign up today.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Now let's talk about the observations and surveys with UFO abductees. What did you get?
Sure. I spent quite a bit of time with support groups of people who believe they've been abducted by aliens. And they were very interesting. At the time that I was doing it, doing these studies back in the 90s, we were starting to see a real shift in UFO stories at that time. That I'm sure you're familiar with, George, that there's abduction stories and there's contactee stories.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And they used to be very distinctive subgroupings, but they've started to really merge. Over the last several decades, where many of the people I met would claim to have both kinds of experiences, that they would claim to sometimes they would claim that there were two different groups contacting them, that they would have negative abduction experiences with little gray guys, and then occasionally they would meet more human-like aliens who were friendly. Other people that I met would claim that the two were working together and that we were actually misunderstanding the intent of the abductors. That, in fact, they probably had our best interests at heart. So one of the things that I really discovered is these stories coming together, these contact stories that sort of seem to have died out around the 50s or 60s, merging with these abduction stories that sort of took their place.
Yeah, I have felt that the old abduction cases were more prevalent than what we're getting today. And some other ufologists say, well, we're just not getting the kind of people coming forward. So what do you think about that, Christopher?
That is quite possible. That's a difficult thing to when we're talking about the paranormal and who believes or has experiences, their willingness to actually talk about them. And definitely with the UFO abduction community, that was one of the most difficult for me to gain their trust. When I would talk to UFO abductees or approach a group and ask if I could study them, they would oftentimes assume that I wanted to make fun of them, that I was there to make fun of their stories, try to debunk their stories. Occasionally, I would have a group that feared that I was perhaps a government official or something trying to track them.
A plant.
But I even had some who believed that I was probably studying the group because I myself was an abductee and just hadn't recalled it yet. But more common was just this fear of revealing this experience. And I definitely have, I've been contacted over the years by individual abductees who are not part of any group, who they reach out to me because they've seen the book, and part of what I learned from them is how afraid they are to talk about these experiences with anyone they know.
What about some of these satanic ritual abuse groups?
That's a scary subject, actually.
That's weird.
It's weird stuff. It's not as prevalent anymore. It's sort of really moved to the fringes, but it was very popular in the 80s and 90s where, similar in a certain sense as to UFO abduction tales, people would recover memories that they were physically and sexually abused by Satanists in satanic rituals. And the ritual abuse survivors that I met would oftentimes say that they had recovered memories during therapy sessions that their entire family were Satanists who had abused them throughout their entire lives. Those were scary stories in the sense that you could be accused of being one of these Satanists and find yourself under investigation. It was quite common in the 80s and 90s for social and health services to investigate a family because a distant member of the family was undergoing therapy and had recovered memories that you were about to kill your children in a satanic ceremony. And there were many cases, the McMartin case and other cases, where the physical evidence that these things were happening just wasn't there. But yet the accusation was so toxic that all the people that I know that were accused of being Satanists based on these recovered memories never recovered their lives. They were shunned, sometimes violently attacked by people in their community as perceived Satanists.
You also looked at miraculous healing stories. What happened there?
On this one, we were trying to make connections between intensive physical, psychological, religious, and paranormal experiences. So we wanted to try to see what are the similarities between some intensive religious experiences that might occur in, like, Pentecostal traditions where you may be speaking in tongues or, say, hearing the voice of God or being healed. And what kind of connections those might have to what we would think of as paranormal experiences, so like ghost experiences or seeing a UFO or something like that. And basically what we ended up finding is that there's a great deal of overlap between these types of experiences, despite what organized religions may say. That is, their experiences that people have are pretty similar, and we also found, and this was really interesting, that if people are not tied to an organized, particularly an exclusivist religion that says this is the one capital T truth, that they tended to have both of those types of experiences. Hmm. So people who weren't strongly tied to an exclusivist religious tradition had both paranormal and religious experiences together. And so there we were trying to kind of see what's some of the overlap. And as Chris mentioned earlier, particular bridging beliefs across religion and paranormal were demons and especially angels. And angels and guardian angels get used both in organized religion and outside of organized religion. And so that was kind of our effort to try to get into those experiences and talk about how they're similar and sometimes different.
Did people see angels, feel angels? What did they do?
Absolutely. The thing about the angel belief and the angel experience, I would say, is that it is so diverse. Some people have, you know, they see physical manifestations of angels. They see sort of creatures of light intervening in their lives. Whereas for other people, they may see angels working through people. So they may see, like, someone save me from drowning. And so they see that as, like, this individual sort of became this angel. And it's more of a kind of like angels working through people. Some people see it as kind of like this external supernatural entity. It's really all over the place. And sometimes people have the experience even just from avoiding harm. So, like, I was supposed to be on this flight and that flight crashed. And so they would attribute that sort of their being saved to an angel experience, even though they didn't physically encounter an angel in any way. So it's a really diverse type of experience.
And in your case, Joseph, of everything you researched, did you have a favorite topic?
Yeah, you know, I love, to me, it's ghosts and the paranormal is where I gravitate to. I find it so interesting, and what I love about ghosts is how they violate these binaries that we hold to be kind of standard categories of thought. So you can think about, like, what is present with us and what is absent, or what is in the past and what is in the present, or what is alive and what is dead. And so ghosts, by their very nature, violate all these binary assumptions. And so they sort of force this new reality upon people. And in addition to that, in addition to the sort of like being a really interesting belief and experience, again, it is sort of taking the place in a lot of ways of where organized religion once was. Ghost belief is now sort of moving into that space sometimes. And so the ghost belief for me, not to downplay any of the rest of it, but I always love learning more about sort of ghosts and ghost hunting groups, and I really love that stuff.
And how about you, Christopher?
Oh, it's definitely Bigfoot. I'm fascinated with Bigfoot my entire life, but I've really been fascinated with the people that I've met who've had Bigfoot experiences. That some of the people that I've met, it's almost as if a missile has imploded in their life. That I know many people who've had Bigfoot experiences who just were walking in the woods one day and all of a sudden say that they saw one eight feet from them. And that is this sort of defining moment, which in religious terms you can call a religious experience, which there was the day before you saw Bigfoot and the day after. And those people fascinate me, how they incorporate this into their lives. How do people who are bankers and going to church, living their everyday lives, how do they grapple with the fact that they just saw Bigfoot the day before?
It's got to be awe-inspiring. It's got to be shocking for a lot of people.
Traumatic as well.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. Joseph and I and our other co-author, Carson, we talk about this, that there may be a day where we're on one of these investigations and it happens to us. And I have to admit to you, George, that is going to be extraordinarily traumatic.
Oh, my God. The heartbeat, rapid lung breathing, everything.
Well, and we inhabit a very comfortable space right now, where we're not out there trying to disprove the paranormal, but we're also not out there trying to prove it. We are just out there looking to see what is happening. The day one of us comes face to face with Bigfoot, and I certainly hope it's Joseph and not me, it's going to be a life-changing experience, and suddenly all of the categories that we have lived our lives by have changed. And seeing that happen in some of the Bigfoot experiencers I know, it's really fascinating to watch.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, I'm Johnny B. Good, host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon, which dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, Centratech, and explores how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed. Ray Trapani, a 26-year-old dropout who was a recovering addict with no tech experience, founded one of the hottest startups in 2017. Ray's company was endorsed by major credit card companies, celebs like DJ Khaled and Floyd Mayweather, and appointed a Harvard-educated CEO. It was going to be the next big thing, until it wasn't, because the entire company was one big lie. I'm excited to let you know that all episodes of Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon, are available and 100% ad-free exclusively with the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, so you can binge the entire season. So don't wait. Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.